There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots, independent media, and a critical look at our media environment. My name is Paul Reese and I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, Radio Free Moscow, Idaho, we'll be speaking to Lee Robardis, who's going to tell us about putting on a low-power, non-commercial FM station in the city of Moscow, Idaho, and talk a little bit about the media scene in that part of the country. And of course, we'll get you up to date with what's going on in our media environment. Do stay tuned. Each week here at Media Geek, we take a look at news of our media environment that typically doesn't get covered in the electronic media or gets buried in the business pages in our print media, and that's because they don't look at news of our media environment as news that matters to politics and democracy. They look at it as just money. But we care, and that's why we bring it to you. Fair use advocates celebrated the apparent demise of an omnibus intellectual property package in the Congress. G.G. Bisone, president of Public Knowledge, said, quote, "Consumers should be pleased that Congress ended its session without passing legislation that would have restricted consumers' freedom to use digital media, restricted their access to information, or otherwise strengthened copyright law beyond what the framers of the Constitution envisioned," end quote. The bill would have increased criminal penalties for copying movies, made it easier to prosecute people who made copyrighted works available on file-sharing networks. It also would have authorized the Justice Department to sue people over copyright law violations. The focus in Washington now shifts to the Supreme Court, which could announce as early as this week whether it will take up a case crucial to the entertainment industry. At issue is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision this year that the companies producing Morpheus and Grokster file-sharing software weren't liable for the copying of music and movies on those networks.
The dominant cable news channel and the nation's largest radio conglomerate this week announced a deal making Fox News the sole provider of news content for Clear Channel radio stations. Fox News established its radio news service last year and currently provides news for 275 stations nationwide. Under the terms of the five-year deal, beginning in 2005, Fox will be responsible for information programming on more than 100 Clear Channel news and talk stations, with a five-minute top-of-the-hour newscast and a nightly news broadcast. Fox will also be Clear Channel's primary source for breaking news. Fox estimated that it could have as many as 500 Clear Channel affiliates by the middle of next year. While Wall Street and the radio industry is all a-Twitter with the deal, Jay Schwartzman of the Media Access Project told the New York Times that the Fox News Clear Channel Union signifies, quote, "the emergence of a conservative programming perspective from companies that are rather explicitly affiliated with conservative causes," end quote.
Democratic FCC Commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein held a public forum on media consolidation in St. Paul, Minnesota on December 9th. More than 100 people took advantage of a public comment period to voice concerns and frustration about the content delivered through the Twin Cities' major media. Most urged the FCC to prevent any further consolidation of media ownership, while Adelstein promised to communicate the views expressed at the forum back to his colleagues at the commission. Commissioner Copps could not attend due to a minor surgery, but had an aide read a written statement urging Commission Chairman Michael Powell not to pursue a Supreme Court challenge against a Third Circuit Court decision striking down the FCC's revised and loosened media ownership rules. Instead, Copps believes the Commission should get going on the Third Circuit Court's order to do a better rewrite of media ownership rules.
On Wednesday, December 8th, the Senate passed H.R. 5419, a bill that designates wireless spectrum for commercial use to be put up for auction. All the bill now requires is a signature from the president. Within 18 months, the FCC must auction spectrum for third-generation wireless services. FCC Chief of Staff Brian Tremont said that the FCC is ready to move to notify National Telecommunications and Information Administration, part of the Department of Commerce, of its intention to have an auction. Quote, "We are thrilled that Congress has cleared the way for next-generation broadband wireless devices," end quote, Tremont said. Quote, "We look forward to putting this spectrum into commercial hands as soon as practicable," end quote. Former NTIA Director Greg Rhodes said that the 10 years from now, the bill will be viewed as the most critical telecom legislation since the 1996 Telecom Act. Quote, "This is a long-term piece of legislation," end quote, he said. "If we want to regain leadership in telecom, the only way we're going to remain competitive is we have to find a way to allocate more spectrum into the commercial sector and make better use of spectrum," end quote. Rhodes said a major problem the U.S. faces is that government users take up so much spectrum. Quote, "The only way to bring the Department of Defense and other agencies to the table is that they have to have the assurance that they're going to have their costs reimbursed and the funding is available. The significance of this legislation I don't think can be overstated long term." There will be no major complaints at the FCC since this is very much in keeping with Michael Pollan's professed devotion to expansion of the wireless broadband market at all costs. Of course, communities lose when spectrum is auctioned off to the highest bidder, because municipalities and independent internet service providers tend not to have the highest budgets.
Just imagine if Clear Channel had to pay highest bidder for the 1,200 stations they got through the 1996 Telecommunications Act. I'm not saying it would be better, but maybe it would take care of the budget deficit.
It might, actually.
That's some of what's going on in our media environment. You're listening to Media Geek. Check us out online at www.mediageek.org. You can check up at the Media Geek blog, get some news that doesn't make it onto the show. You can also listen to archive editions of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. We'll be back in just a moment with an interview with Lee Robartis from Radio Free Moscow. Do stay tuned. One of Drew's favorite there, Skinny Puppy.
from the good old days of 1986 when we were on Iraq's, on Saddam Hussein's side fighting against Iran's use of chemical weapons against Iraqis. And now the tables have turned twice since then, so the song becomes apropos once
Always
again.
Be careful who you make friends with. I think that's
the foreign policy moral of the story.
Be careful who your strange bedfellows are. Moving to some of our friends, Radio Free Moscow is a relatively new low-power FM station in Moscow, Idaho. They are one of the two other affiliates carrying the Media Geek radio show. Lee Robartis is the guy who helped put the station on the air, and I think it's really informative and interesting to hear the story of different new community radio stations going on the air around the country. It gives us an idea of one, how this idea of community radio is taking root and how it does serve diverse communities of all different types around the country. I think it shows us some the diversity there of how different things that people are doing with these stations and the different ways in which they try to make them run and try to fund them, because certainly that's the other half of the equation. You get them on the air, but then you got to keep them on the air. And Lee is a history in working in the alternative media, having worked with Pacifica and then worked with more recently Free Speech Radio News, which grew out of the striking reporters who stopped working for Pacifica. And so he's got a lot to say, and we'll probably be talking to him again soon. But here he's going to tell us more about Radio Free Moscow. Your station, Radio Free Moscow, and at KRFP, and how long have you been on the air now?
Since October 12th, we commenced broadcasting.
And when did you receive your construction permit?
That was May 2003, So we applied in January 2001. So we waited a long time, but maybe not as long as some. But, you know, compared to the translators that are being put on the air at a rate of 30 a day, you know, it seems like the FCC definitely had a go-slow attitude towards low-power FM.
And so why did you and the other folks who put the station on the air decide that a low-power station was something which Moscow, Idaho needed?
Well, I think it goes to the media environment. There are a lot of progressive-minded people in the community, and when we were doing fundraising, we could tell, you know, they sort of agreed with the original founding members of the board that, you know, they needed a station where, you know, a progressive point of view could get on the air, where local community members would have an easy time getting access to the airwaves, and we wanted it to be free-form. Moscow, Idaho has experience with free-form radio, so, you know, there's a college station that in some ways may have paved the way for us because they've been free-form for a long time and running Democracy Now! And Free Speech Radio News, and people seem to want more of that, and that's basically why we decided to put it on the air. There's musical constituencies that are being served that weren't, you know, necessarily served as well before, but I think the main thing was, you know, getting progressive local programming on and progressive national programming on.
And this college station, is that the University of Idaho station?
Yeah, that's KUOI.
Okay.
And I've worked there, and I still have a show there as well.
So now you've added a second sort of a progressive or reformist station to the mix. Are you running it like a community radio station?
I would say so. We've trained 49 DJs since we've been on the air, DJs and talk show hosts.
Mm-hmm.
They're covering 43 shows, and we probably will train some more. So I would call it a community volunteer station.
And how did you manage to raise the money you needed to put the station on the air?
Ooh, boy. It was sort of tough. Most of it, let's see, there were some grants, and they're mainly donations from local residents. We have, if you donated $100, you were a founder. There's a $25 annual membership you could opt to, or $15 for students. And we did get a couple of grants for startup as well, from Foundation Northwest and a local county organization called Latah County Community Foundation, and the Moscow Food Co-op also chipped in with their 2% Tuesdays program, where you, everything bought in the co-op for a month of Tuesdays, 2% of that of the tally goes to the nonprofit group, in which case Radio Free Moscow is one of them. So those are the main ways, and
okay,
we are selling underwriting now as well.
So to help pay the bills. So now, do you rent a space somewhere?
Yeah, we're in a 100-year-old building in downtown Moscow, which is, I should warn people, that's a tough place electronically to put a station on the air. We still are fighting a little bit of hum, although the signal sounds pretty good. Most people don't notice. And we're getting a good deal on the space, but, you know, there's a lot of utilities and so forth that has to be paid.
And do you have your tower right there at that building?
Yeah, right. The mast is right on top of the building. We're not in the highest place around town because, you know, downtown is a little bit lower than places around it. We have applied for a grant to put our antenna, to get a studio transmitter link and put our antenna on a local tower on the edge of town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not on Moscow Mountain or Paradise Ridge, because that would be too high. Because under the low power FM service, the FCC will dock your power by a certain number of watts depending on how high you go over 30 meters above average terrain. So we need a low tower that's higher than the town, but not up on the mountain.
Right. So maybe for people who don't know much about Moscow, Idaho, you can tell us a little bit about the city and the area.
It's the University of Idaho town in Idaho. It's probably one of the more liberal cities in Idaho. Although Latah County, the county around us, did go for Bush. The only county that went for Kerry was the county where Sun Valley is in central Idaho. It's really, you know, a nice town. There's definitely a feel of community involvement, which it really helps, you know, the idea of getting a station on the air. The media environment here, you were probably going to ask about that. It's more conservative, though, than maybe the population of Moscow. I would say the local paper leans towards conservative. The Spokesman Review, the Metro Daily, is definitely a conservative paper. They endorsed almost an entire Republican slate in the last election without regard as to whether the candidates endorsed war crimes in Iraq or not, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Lewiston Tribune takes a more centrist stance. That's a city about 25 miles south of here. You know, there's a lot of right-wing folks out in the sticks of Idaho that write letters to the editor.
So is it kind of a fairly medium-sized city, or is it a larger sort of metro area?
It's about 20,000.
And
it's a town.
And other cities nearby that are larger or smaller?
Washington, mm-hmm. which is a little bit larger, but it's, you know, comparable in size, and they're 8 miles away, and they're home of Washington State University, and we're hoping someday to have a decent signal into Pullman. People can get us there, but it's, you know, it's iffy. It depends if you're on a east-facing hill or if you have a good antenna on your radio and so forth.
So right now you cover Moscow pretty good.
Moscow fairly well.
And what's your radio environment like? I know you mentioned that the university has a student-run radio station. What's the rest of the radio dial like there?
Well, I think it's pretty typical for rural America. We do people can get the Spokane stations. There's a college station, a student-run station also out of Pullman that some people can get in town here. There's NPR is fairly popular here, and sort of the idea among some board members that when the idea of, running national corporate radio, a satire of NPR put out by an L.A. comedy troupe called The People Who Do That, they were offering us free CDs as a inducement for fundraisers. Mm-hmm. And board members were against that because they really didn't want us to be dissing NPR. However, I disagree because I think NPR was uniquely positioned of all the major media outlets in the U.S. to stop the war or stop Bush from being reelected just through the course if they had followed through with enough of the right type of reporting, which they did not. And that's not to say anything maybe against NPR reporters per se, as it is maybe to say something about the top-level management and editors of NPR.
And is the ownership of your commercial media, is it fairly, is it local? Is it fairly concentrated?
It has been local, but most of the local commercial radio stations have been sold to a Lewiston, Idaho firm called Idavent. Right now, there's only two owners of commercial radio on this area called the Palouse, which includes Moscow, Idaho, Pullman, Washington, and Colfax, Washington. And one of them is Idavent, which owns, I think about 8 stations now, two down in Lewiston Valley and 6 up here on the Palouse. And then there's another firm, a local firm, that owns an AM-FM mm-hmm. duplex in Pullman, Washington. And then the NPR stations are, you know, run by Washington State University.
And on those commercial stations, are you seeing changes? That you see, like, around the country where this seems to be moving more towards automation, more syndicated programming? Or is there still some, like, local flavor to them? Can you tell that they're actually from your area rather than just, you know, sound like a station would sound in Spokane or Seattle or in Champaign-Urbana?
Right. I don't listen to them a lot, but I get the idea that they are moving more towards automation. I have mm-hmm. seen an article in Radio World about Idavent set up, and they are running them all out of Lewiston now. They may have some local folks on the air in the morning, but I think they're more automation. And one indicator was that One of the stations that was sold to Idavend recently had a big auction selling a whole bunch of equipment and old records and CDs,
mm-hmm.
you know, just a huge all-day auction.
It's kind of like Clear Channel, where they'd buy up stations and they'd have warehouses full of equipment from all those stations.
Right, right.
So you don't have Clear Channel there yet?
Clear Channel's up in Spokane. They they run, I think, eight stations up there, six or eight.
Wow.
And then there's some other large conglomerates that own stations, you know, national chains that own stations up in Spokane as well.
And do those stations reach Moscow?
Some of them do.
Some of them do. Yeah, about how far is it?
That's 90 miles.
About 90 miles.
It's a long shot.
And you're listening to an interview with Lee Robartis that Paul and I did with him this week. It's about his low-power FM station in Moscow, Idaho, one of the few stations that airs the Media Geek program. And I just want to remind you that you are listening to Media Geek. In fact, you can check us out on the web at mediageek.org and listen to archive edition of the programs. And you can see what's going on in our media environment that doesn't make it to the show. So we're going to go right back to the interview now with Lee Robartis.
At Radio Free Moscow, you've got about 45 DJs, you said, now trained?
49, yeah.
49, I'm sorry. And so you're starting to fill out your schedule pretty well now?
Yeah, the schedule's pretty much filled out. I mean, the few hours in the late night where we don't have a DJ, we run a little bit of automation. Usually some of the progressive news shows that I can't fit during the other parts of the schedule, and a little bit of music. But, yeah, we're 24-7, and DJs tend to go till midnight, 2 a.m., sometimes 4 a.m., and then we have a morning mix show that comes on at 7 a.m., which is sort of formatted with, you know, we have a free speech radio news feature, then we play music mixed with music and some commentaries, local and national, like Hightower, and some of our own news reporting is slowly, as we build a local news department, and probably won't really get going until January.
Mm-hmm.
And
still, it sounds good. It sounds like something to be really necessary for you there.
Yeah, and we are a Pacifica affiliate, and we run 30 syndicated programs, not all from Pacifica, but a lot of grassroots media type things from, like, for example, from the RadioForAll.net website. You know, Unwelcome Guests is on. Media Geek, of course, is on. We're one of three stations. Eat the Airwaves out of Seattle, which has some excellent commentary and analysis of the situation in Iraq, plus, you know, West Side Seattle politics.
Mm-hmm.
There's Explorations with Michio Kaku from Pacifica. Between the Lines, Background Briefing on International Issues from Pacifica's KPFK in L.A. with the Ian Masters. We're running Making Contact, Independent Native News, the Houston Indie Media Show, Guns and Butter, and the Shortwave Report, and Sprouts, and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's really a lot of good stuff now available. It's every time I go to Radio For All and go to Radio Indie Media, it's really nice to see how much there is out there to share freely. It's and how easy it is now compared to back in the days, you had to bicycle tapes and, you know, send them around the country or send around CDs, or
right.
If you were lucky enough to have a satellite downlink.
Right. We don't have that. We download off the internet, and yeah, most of those shows are free. You know, we pay a really modest fee to Pacifica every year. Yeah, it's just an incredible amount of shows. And in fact, I sort of spent the 3 years while we were putting the station together just listening on the internet and trying to find all the good shows that were available to put on the schedule. And we probably have the most of that type of programming of any licensed station.
What's your role then with the station?
I'm the chairman of the board. Right now I'm sort of de facto station manager. I'm here all the time. The other board members helped build the station physically, and we've had other volunteers that have, you know, we have a volunteer engineer. So far, the station is entirely run by volunteers. There's no pay involved.
Mm-hmm. And how are programming decisions made?
Before we went on the air, I submitted a grid to the board based on all these shows I've been listening to for the syndicated shows. And so we have a program schedule that sort of contains the you know, the outline of where the syndicated shows would go, and some of them are sort of marked as flexible, depending on whether a local DJ could only do that slot. And then we put out applications for local DJs, and I'd say the station's about two-thirds local DJs and talk show hosts and one-third syndicated shows. So that's probably a little high for low-power FM. But
So who decides who gets on the air? Is that the board directors?
Basically, when we get enough applications, I send an email to the board and the volunteer music directors, and we get together in a room and decide who would do what shows. And we're trying to make it so the decisions aren't so hard and fast, like people would have the shows forever. We've decided that three times a year we would shuffle the schedule. We know DJ, you know, volunteer schedules change anyway, so it's probably a good idea. And so we're going to shuffle the schedule three times a year.
That sounds like an interesting approach, since I know that's kind of been one of the perennial problems of community radio stations, I think. And one of the things that has a lot of conflict is the schedule. And, you know, of course, with long-running stations, you know, like a WEFT, but even more so at stations that are, I think, in bigger markets, in bigger cities, they have shows that stay on in the same place for 20, 25 years. And often, you know, there are people who say, well, that show's been on so long, give someone else a chance. And there's other people who say, well, but, you know, it's a great show. Everyone loves it, and we don't want to mess with it, right? And that's kind of always, I think, been an area of conflict. And I've heard even some people like David Barsamian mention it and discuss it at conferences and say, you know, this is something which community radio should take seriously, unless you just sort of, you know, turn into, you know, get sort of turgid and maybe aren't so responsive to what your community wants because you're just doing the same old thing.
And our shows are free form. You know, somebody's free to do a you know, a program that has a single genre of music, but they don't have to stick to that. On their applications, people mention what style of music they plan on playing, and as long as we feel that they aren't being deceptive about it, you know, we understand that people experiment with new music, especially when they're exposed to a library full of stuff they may not have heard before, and you know, we basically tell people basically play what they want, as you know, as long as it falls within FCC rules.
Cool. And so, has the response to the station in the last 2 months been pretty good?
Oh yeah. We've got, like I said, we've got all these DJs, all these folks that have applied. The comments I get around town are, you know, universally positive. You know, I suppose if people don't like it, you know, a lot of things are slanted pretty progressively on the air. Both with the local shows and the syndicated shows, you know, if they don't like it, they probably aren't talking to us or they just tuning out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our main goal right now is just to tell more people, let more people know about the station, because the local progressive community, the people you run into every day at the food co-op, you know, they're really happy with what they hear. Some people say they listen to it all the time.
And any plans? You mentioned, you know, you want to try and get a news department off the ground. Are there any other big plans right now for the station?
Well, we did put in the grant for to get a studio transmitter link on a local tower. We wouldn't mind getting our signal into Pullman better. Unfortunately, the frequencies there have all been called for in the translator invasion by religious stations. So unless they change the low-power FM rules, which is unlikely in a second Bush administration, to either allow directional signals or allow third adjacent or you know, closer packed stations to get together for low-power FM, it's going to be tough to get a signal in there. But those are a couple of growth areas that we are definitely looking at. You know, as far as that goes, maybe we should just try and continue along and make enough money to sustain ourselves.
Sure. Makes sense. Well, Lee, thanks a lot for talking to us, and we'll definitely want to hear news as it happens there.
Okay, yeah, I'd be glad to talk to you again.
And that's Lee Robartis from Radio Free Moscow, Moscow, Idaho.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.